You're listening to Underground History, a collaboration between Jefferson Public Radio and the Southern Oregon University Laboratory of Anthropology, or SULA. I'm your host, Chelsea Rose, and each episode we take a deep dive into little-known aspects of history in Oregon and beyond. Today I am joined by two archaeologists working on the front lines of archaeology in a changing climate. Alex DeGiorgi and Mike Newland are with the Alta Heritage Foundation, which, among other things, works to reunite wildfire victims with the previously cremated ashes of loved ones that are lost to wildfire. Mike and Alex, welcome to the show.
Hi, Chelsea. Thanks for inviting us.
Yeah. So before we jump into the fire, so to speak, I want to start out talking about water. Mike, when I was in grad school, you were advocating for archaeologists to take climate change seriously and to start thinking about these things and the ways that it's not only going to impact our discipline, but how we might be well situated to help. And this had led you to projects documenting archaeological sites along the California coastline, which were being impacted from erosion. So I was wondering if you could speak really briefly about what drew you to this work. And, you know, I'm dating us by saying this is about looking back like 20 years now, but how much our understanding and acceptance about these realities and horrors of climate change have shifted. Like, not that I ever thought this, but you're not the paranoid kook anymore. You know, this is real. This is around us.
Yeah, well, thanks. yeah, you know, I originally got started in this doing some work for Point Reyes National Seashore. They wanted to have a climate change study. It was a pilot study for national parks about what the impacts of climate change might be on their archaeological resources. And this was probably 2012. At that time, I didn't really know anything about climate change. I hadn't seen it in convenient truth. I hadn't been following it. And I just dove into the literature on climate change at that point to just try to get perspective on it, and had to take a breather after about 3 months of that. It was kind of overpowering, frankly. And it sort of put the fire under me that, there's things that we needed to do. And at that time, the best models that were out there were ones who were focused on sea level rise. So that is what I was focusing on. And we were surveying the California coastline to look for sites that were going to get inundated or eroded. But I think since then, fire has definitely jumped to the top of the media concern and has really fast-tracked the need for us to address this.
Yeah, and I remember when the fire burned in Weed, California, which is just south of where I am in Ashland, and it was so devastating, and it seemed like such an anomaly. But since then, catastrophic fires happen nearly every year. So, Alex, can you speak a little bit to how the Tubbs Fire led to the creation of this work that's now being done by the Alta Heritage Foundation?
Yeah. So I live in Santa Rosa, and the Tubbs Fire was a very destructive wildfire that happened in 2017. In one night, 8,000 structures were burned, and we lost 54 casualties in that event. It really was a horrible event for our community. And in the wake of these kinds of disasters, you know, the affected community really wants to jump in and help. And there was just an abundance of volunteers trying to help each other navigate the situation. And I share an office, I'm a professional archaeologist, and I share an office with some engineers. And one of my friends, who's an engineer, came over. He had lost his home in that night. And with it, the ashes of both his mother and father, which to add to the grief of losing his home, he didn't have the opportunity to follow through on his parents' wishes, which were to be put in a special place. So he came over to ask if there's anything that I could do to help recover those ashes. And, you know, in those situations, you don't say no. But this is something that had never been done before, so I wasn't really confident that this was possible. But I thought, let's give it a try. And we went out and helped him find the ashes of his parents, and that was a great event. And that was the inaugural recovery of this whole process. That recovery was covered in the local newspaper, which triggered lots of affected families to reach out to us who are in a similar situation. who had had cremains of family members in the home that were lost, and they really wanted to recover those. So we organized a volunteer effort and did a lot of work within the fire footprint. And then since then, this was, you know, years ago, we've worked in 18 wildfire disaster areas and excavated over 300 homes to help folks recover these remains. So it's become quite an operation. We built a nonprofit around this work to help support it. And we are planning a response to the Southern California wildfires in the middle of next month.
You're listening to Underground History on the Jefferson Exchange. I'm your host, Chelsea Rose, and today we are talking about the role of archaeology in a changing climate. So let's talk a little bit about process here. So this was something, like you said, that didn't really exist before you started doing it, didn't even know if it would work. So how did you, kind of through trial and error, I guess, figure out the methodology to pair, you know, the skill set of archaeologists, looping in canine forensic teams, and getting to, you know, kind of the methodology that's now being used in all of these recoveries?
Well, yeah, great question. Frankly, you know, this is a lot of trial and error. What we're basically doing is taking methods, archaeological methods, that were really originally intended for studying the past and adapting them to this current situation, which is a disaster response. And so, you know, understanding how to distinguish between ash of a burned building and ash of human remains was one thing. I mean, when you walk onto these fire footprints and look at the vast destruction, and you're looking for a small pocket of human ash within the wreckage of a home, it seems like an impossible feat. It, you know, literally a needle in a haystack. But over the years, we've been doing this. We've figured out methods and systems operations to put into play that, so we're highly successful. And what that looks like is, you know, we organize a team of volunteer archaeologists and canine forensics who go to the site. We meet with the homeowner, and it all begins with an interview. We ask, you know, who are we looking for? Is this your husband, your son, your daughter? Where in the home were the remains kept? You know, they were on the bureau by the bed. And what kind of vessel were there? They were in a ceramic urn. Can you point to that area? And they tell, you know, they'll point to a part of the wreckage of the home where we should expect to find the remains. So with that interview, we get a pretty good sense of where we should start looking. And then the canine teams do a search through the ash footprint. These dogs are specifically trained to alert on human cremated remains. They don't alert on animal remains, and they're not live find dogs, not search and rescue dogs. These dogs are specifically trained for this purpose. When the dogs detect the scent, they will alert and show us the location of where they're detecting the scent, and we'll mark that location. So between the interview with the homeowner and the dogs, we have a pretty good sense of where we should be searching. Mm-hmm. After that, the archaeologists will suit up in Tyvek suits and respirators and things and enter the ash footprint. We'll survey through the wreckage and see if we can just spot the remains just on the surface. And following that, we'll begin an excavation where we're sifting through the ashes with shovels and trowels and excavating towards where we think we will likely find the remains. And as we're doing this, we invariably will be finding heirloom objects that were kept in the home. You know, in the course of doing, we understand that, like, families want to keep their most important heirloom objects together. So we'll be finding, you know, grandpa's reading glasses and military decorations, you know, medals and things, children's ceramics that they made when they're, you know, these kinds of things that were really valuable heirloom objects are usually kept near these remains. And as we're finding them, you know, we'll lift it up and we'll show it to the homeowner, and you recognize this, we'll ask them. And, you know, and then we'll ask, was this near where we should be looking? And, oh, yeah, that was also on the bureau. And so you're really close. And so through this feedback, we're getting a sense of digging through the ash if we're getting close. And then when we detect the human ash, we will assess if it's human ash versus building wreckage. And there's some key characteristics we're looking for. Human ash is different than the wreckage of the building, and that the building is a heterogeneous mix of drywall and metal and things like that. So you'll have this kind of ash that's really different. So we're looking for that difference in texture. We're looking for differences in color. And then, are there any remnants of the vessel it was kept in? That can help us determine the difference between the ash there. And then the most definitive thing we can find is a medallion. So by law, crematoriums are required to include a metal medallion with the human ash. And this medallion has a two-part numbering system on it. The first part designates the crematorium, and the second part is the individual. So that's a unique identifier. And this medallion's put on the corpse at the crematorium. It's put in the furnace and burned, so it's designed to make it through extreme fire events, right? And so that's part of why we will find these medallions and they survive. And when we find that, we know that we've definitively recovered that individual. We'll collect the remains and put them in a bag and give them back to the homeowner, which is, invariably a really emotional event. This is pretty raw stuff we're dealing with. And then we go to the next site. We mm-hmm. do that in each of these disaster areas.
And you had mentioned before that there'd been about 300 recoveries to date. Mike, when you're thinking about climate change and the evolving role of archaeology within it, I mean, right now we're looking at this huge fires in LA County, and there's the potential for three times as many remains to need to be recovered as you guys have done since 2017, just on this one event. So how do you think that archaeologists need to continue to pivot and think about the ways in which we can mobilize to use our skill set to help communities be more resilient or respond to these kind of horrific events as they seem to be only more and more likely going forward?
Yeah, I mean, that's a great question. I think this is something that we're all wrestling with over the last couple of years. The archaeological industry, for lack of a better term, has been really wrapped up in post-fire recovery efforts, people having their houses cleared or from after they've been burnt, having the Army Corps come in and clear the houses out. PG&E's putting putting cables underground to avoid fire. We do a tremendous amount of veg management work in preparation for that. So, there's an industry shift to doing this kind of work. But in terms of the kinds of things that Alex and I are working on, what we're finding is that there is an incredible desire amongst our community to help. And we're getting a ton of folks that are volunteering to help do this information work. Just as, as you may remember, we got a lot of volunteers to help us with the survey work out on the coast. What is not there is the funding. And particularly for the work that we do, how human remains are viewed by state feds is more of a possession than human remains. And so there's no funding to go look for this kind of thing. So we're having to do it on a volunteer basis. Similarly, there isn't funding, though there increasingly is more, but there hasn't been funding to survey areas that are likely to be inundated or be burned ahead of time to start getting an idea about what we're about to lose. So, archaeologists, I think, are probably uniquely situated to understand what the long-term implications of this climate shift are on the human population. And there's, I think, a lot of us, increasingly more of us, that are trying to get out in front of it. But it's a moving target, and it's a lot of work.
Yeah, yeah. Well, thank you both for the important work you're doing. And that wraps up this round of Underground History on the Jefferson Exchange. If you, listener, would like to learn more about the Alta Heritage Foundation, you can head to the website, which is altahf.org, to learn more about these ongoing fire efforts and how you can help. I'm your host, Chelsea Rose. Our show producers are Natalie Golay and Charlie Zimmerman. You can find this episode and many more at jeffexchange.org or wherever you get your podcasts.